Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A man who has served in several different and very important capacities in that war is our first guest. He is Congressman Ron DeSantis. He is a freshman member of the United States House of Representatives, representing the people of the 6th District of Florida. He serves on several very important committees of the Congress and has insights as a result both of that service and his previous service in the United States Navy, where he was a combat veteran of the Iraq campaign and decorated at that, as well as a man who served with the Joint Task Force on Guantanamo. And we'll be talking about all of this with him in the moments ahead. Let me just say to start with, Congressman, welcome to our program and thank you for this remarkable array of services you're rendering to our country. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
In part based upon your Navy service as well as your role in the Congress at the moment, I'd be very interested in your take on what I call the Bergdahl affair, the exchange of the five Taliban detainees previously held in the facility that you served at, and the man that we've extracted as a result of turning them loose.
Well, I'll tell you, it was shocking to me that the administration and the president was willing to replenish the Taliban with this terror dream team. I mean, these guys are some of the worst of the worst. When I was in Gitmo, and this was during the Bush administration, there were always reviews of different detainees, and there were a number of detainees that have been released since, where the military will look at it and say, you know what, we think these people probably aren't threats. And even of that group, you still got 30% of them who go back and join the jihad and fight after their release. So those are the people that we think may not be bad anymore. These people, everybody acknowledges that they're hardened terrorists, and they're gonna rejoin the fight. So I think it's bad for national security, and I think that it just reflects this president. He just has a skewed view of the world. He thinks that by removing troops, that we can simply declare the war over. The Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Haqqani, these guys may have something to say about that.
Yeah, they get a vote, it turns out, in this. If you're not just going to surrender, one party can't end wars, it seems to me. Congressman DeSantis, you're obviously imbued with a sense of honor, duty, country. What do you make of the characterization of this former captive, shall we say, of the Taliban or the Haqqani network more specifically, now Sergeant Bo Bergdahl? He has been characterized by Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor to the President, as a man who served with honor and distinction. Would you say that?
I'll tell you what, Susan Rice, first of all, even put her out after the credibility that she does not have with so many Americans because of her misstatements about Benghazi, what was surprising. But for her to say that he served with honor and distinction, and then to see all these people who served with him say that he deserted them, and then also, she also said more than just that he served with honor and distinction, she said that he was captured on the battlefield. Well, it turns out that he voluntarily left his post and sought out, perhaps, the Taliban. And so I think the administration made a huge mistake to try to pretend that this was an American hero. And I know a lot of military people have contacted me, and they're very, very distressed with that because, you know, at a minimum, before you're even a hero, you got to do honorable service, and they don't think that he's done that. And I've talked to some people. I've actually talked to a couple of people who were POWs in Vietnam, and they're kind of split on, you know, when you desert, what does that mean? But at a minimum, I think they were all in agreement that this is not something that you should be celebrating when you give up five terrorists for somebody who may have left his post.
Yeah, particularly terrorists of this caliber, as you say. Congressman, let me switch gears. You're a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and serve on its Mideast subcommittee. I gather you're concerned, as am I, about the administration's seeming willingness now, if indeed it hasn't been going on for some time, to deal with another terrorist operation, the designated terrorist operation at that, namely Hamas. It's said to be part of a unity government with the Palestinians at this point. Does that change things in your view? And what about the law?
Well, the law is clear that USAID cannot go to Palestinians if Hamas is a part of the government. And U.S. law also makes it a felony offense to provide material support to terrorist groups. Hamas has been acknowledged to be a terrorist group that has not been controversial even amongst Republicans and Democrats. And so I think that they cannot continue to fund the Palestinian Authority. Now, I think they're going to try to do that. So the question is in Congress, you know, what do we do about it? And I think this is a classic example of how we need to use the power of the purse to deny the funds. You can pass a law like the 30-day notice requirement for the release of detainees, and this president showed that he's going to go around it. But if you actually remove the funding, you know, it makes it more difficult for the president to continue in his lawlessness. And so I'd like to see us, so when we go back next week, I'd like to see the House start thinking about how we're going to remove the funding so that the president cannot engage with Hamas. It's clearly contrary to our national security interests, and it's contrary to the interests of our only real ally in the region, Israel.
There seems a lot of bipartisan sentiment along this line, too, and I'm all about trying to find places where we can make common cause across party lines on behalf of a strong national security, and this certainly seems like one of them. Congressman, you also serve, and again, our guest is Congressman Ron DeSantis. He is from the 6th District of Florida, and I was going to say that you serve on the House Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on the Constitution and Civil Justice, and one of the things that connects the dots here, it seems, between the president's violation of the law with respect to the release of fellows like this gang from the Taliban Dream Team, as you call them, and this business of negotiating with or otherwise doing business with or aiding even Hamas is part of what seems to be now a really widespread and growing pattern on the part of this president, namely unlawful behavior. Not just a failure to faithfully execute the laws, but faithfully, you know, breaching them, it seems to me, or at least relentlessly so. You've mentioned the power of the purse, and I couldn't agree with you more that that seems to be something that the founders had in mind as a check on this kind of executive misconduct. Is it time to begin thinking about other measures, including the bringing of charges of high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, it's interesting in terms of the checks that we have. Of course, the power of the purse is one. If you had people in the Senate who were interested in checking the president, they could deny him appointments and just not confirm people to his government until he started complying with the law. And then, of course, you could, impeachment would be the most serious check that we would have. The problem that I see with all of those is that you really need to have determined majorities in both houses of Congress. And so right now, I think you have a majority in the House who believes that the president is not satisfying his oath of office. But, you know, if we send a bill to defund something, what is Reid going to do? He's not going to bring it up, or if we go beyond that. And so that's really the problem, is that you have a Senate majority leader and a majority of senators right now who are fine with the president behaving this way. They're complicit in it. And they're more worried about their immediate political interests, because some of his lawlessness benefits them because they don't have to take tough votes. And so they're putting that ahead of their oath to support and defend the Constitution and to defend their institution. Because if this president gets away with it, the thing is someone else on the other side of the aisle is going to be in there sometime in the future. And he's setting precedents to allow a Republican president to go rogue if they want to. I mean, with Obamacare, you have a Republican. Why could they just not suspend the whole law or just not follow any of the law, given that this president's picked and chosen some of this stuff? So he's setting bad precedent. The problem is we do not have a sufficient number of people who are in elected positions right now who believe that that's serious. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Yeah. Well, it certainly ought to be a prime feature, not only, as you say, Congressman, of the next round of your congressional deliberations, but also these elections in 2014. We need to establish once again the proper constitutional checks and balances, and we appreciate your contribution to doing so, Congressman Ron DeSantis, and for your past service in so many different ways to the country. Keep it up, sir. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights, a man I'm very proud to say is now a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. He's also a senior analyst with the Langley Intelligence Group Network. You can find it at lignet.com. You will also find him in the annals of the intelligence community as a man who contributed mightily as a professional in the CIA for nearly 20 years as a chief of staff to John Bolton when he was an undersecretary of state, and also as a senior member of the professional staff of the House Select Committee on Intelligence. Fred, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Frank.
It's D-Day, the 70th anniversary of that historic event, Fred. I'd just like to start both by offering you an opportunity to pay tribute to those who served in that extraordinary moment, but also whether there are lessons for our own time in what it began to bring to an end, namely the horror of World War II.
Well, it's an important day, and it's a very solemn day. It's 70 years ago of the D-Day invasion, and the brave men who risked their lives, I think 9,000 of whom died, there's not many of them left who were there during that incredible invasion. I was watching video of Ronald Reagan's famous 1984 speech. It's up on Newsmax.com about the boys at Point du Hoc. And, you know, I know many people who've devoted their life to government service, but this really was the ultimate sacrifice supplement, and it really leaves me in awe.
I think it should leave us all in awe, but I'm especially interested in the similarities in some respects between what is going on today and the events that led up to World War II, the circumstances specifically of, you know, a rising, ambitious, aggressive, authoritarian, if not totalitarian, power in the East with clear ambitions against the free world in its Western reaches across the continent of Europe. I'm not saying that we're going to see World War II breaking out anytime soon or, you know, a new Nazi-like horde descending from Russia, but I do think that what we're facing is, again, a rising tide of aggressive behavior that is being met by fecklessness, and that can only bring us grief. We're visiting with Fred Flights, a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, a career intelligence professional. And Fred, moving on from D-Day to events of our own time, talk about what this Bergdahl affair looks like to you, the circumstances of the transfer of these Taliban prisoners and what it portends especially.
Well, I want to talk specifically about this kerfuffle involving the Senate Intelligence Committee, specifically the Democratic chairman, Dianne Feinstein, who's upset that she wasn't consulted with, both because this is something presidents are supposed to do on controversial and risky initiatives, and it was required under a law that Congress be given 30 days notice before transfer of Gitmo prisoners. I'm sympathetic that that law might be unconstitutional to that argument. The presidents have to talk to Congress when they do these things. Now, the first argument was because of his health and his safety. It had to be done very quickly.
This is the Bergdahl caper, specifically the condition of the prisoner being exchanged for these terrorists.
For the Taliban. And then a new argument came out that, well, we didn't tell Congress because the Taliban insisted upon this, and there was a leak, other unfriendly Taliban might have mixed the deal. They can't both be true. And basically, wasn't it possible to tell Senator Feinstein about this? And assuming this is true, the minute Bergdahl was exchanged, they should have called Feinstein and told her this was the reason. But she heard this several days later, which makes it clear this isn't true at all. It's another lie trotted out to justify a political plot.
Right. And you have specifically singled out for criticism a purveyor of such lies, now serially, namely Susan Rice. Talk a bit about why you believe, Fred Flights, Susan Rice must resign.
Susan Rice is the National Security Advisor. She is the president's senior person on national security. She approves all the policies that go with policy recommendations to President Obama. We know in September 2012, she made some fantastically inaccurate statements about the terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. She said, and she said these things on five Sunday morning talk shows. On two Sunday morning talk shows last week, she said that Bird Girl served with honor and distinction. Now, either she did not know that's not the case, that he was a deserter, or she lied about it. In either case, as you said, these serial inaccurate misstatements on national security, I think this qualifies her to be the senior advisor to the president on national security.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. This really represents a further breach of trust with the American people. And whether the president continues to have confidence in her or not is his business. It's our business, however, that we can't have confidence in Susan Rice. And I couldn't agree with you more. She must go. I hope she will. Fred, talk, if you would, a little bit about what seems to be the larger purpose in releasing these five prominent and dangerous global jihadists. Not only the desire of the president to just walk away from the Afghan conflict, but to close Guantanamo Bay through whatever means are available to him, including by simply dumping its dangerous denizens, you know, willy-nilly between now and the end of his term.
I regret to say I believe the president was looking for a quick political victory, probably to distract attention from the Veterans Affairs scandal. But I also believe this marks a very troubling tendency we're going to see, and we talked about this last week, of the president engaging in some very risky and controversial efforts as he wraps up his presidency. And I think you're exactly right. This is the beginning of the president's plan to empty out Guantanamo Bay before he leaves office.
Yeah. And if he were to do so, Fred Flights, as a career intelligence professional studying these matters of terrorism and various other threats to our country, as you have over decades now, what is the likelihood that this will actually intensify the danger to not just our forces and personnel overseas, but to Americans here at home, really threatening public safety?
The worst of the worst are the Guantanamo prisoners are left at the prison. These are people who can't be sent to other countries, can't be let go, and we're concerned they're going to return to the battlefield. And a very high percentage of prisoners released have returned to the battlefield. They've returned to the fight. That's why these guys are there. I mean, President Bush wanted to close Guantanamo, but there was no acceptable solution to closing it because we didn't know what to do with the prisoners. President Obama does not seem to care about the security implications. He wants to close the prison because he bragged during the campaign. He promised during the campaign he would do so. It looks like he's now prepared to do so, no matter what the cost.
Unilaterally and against congressional will. Fred, let me turn quickly and lastly to one update. I mentioned earlier concerns about a rising threat in the East in Europe. The president has agreed to send $5 million worth of night vision goggles and body armor and other non-lethal assistance to the Ukrainian military. What is that likely to do for their capabilities, and how do you think the Russians are going to interpret that pitiful contribution?
It's not going to make any significant difference for the Ukrainian army. I think that the solution to Ukraine is to try to come up with some type of agreement, probably a finalization agreement, where Russia and the United States agree that Ukraine will be a neutral entity that will not be influenced by either the West or Russia. But it would take leadership to do this and credibility to deal with the Russians. But we don't have that credibility right now. I think Vladimir Putin realizes that, and such a pitiful supply of military equipment to the Ukrainians. I mean, the Russians are going to laugh at us. They've already laughed at us, and it's not going to make it better.
And presumably reinterpreted as a further inducement to crush the Ukrainians. I'm not terribly keen on the finalization idea either, but I must say that looks better than what's in prospect now. Fred Flights, we have to let you go for the moment. Thank you very much for the great work you do at the Center and at Lignet.com. Keep it up. Come back to us again next week. Next up, Rosemary Jenks joins us from Numbers USA on what I think of as a sort of children's crusade. Children now pouring across our southern border. What's up with that? Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 70 years ago today, Allied forces achieved immortality with their valor and courage in assaulting Adolf Hitler's seemingly impregnable fortress Europe via the beaches and cliffs of Normandy. 40 years later, President Reagan saluted survivors of D-Day with these unforgettable words, quote, "You were young the day you took these cliffs. Some of you were hardly more than boys with the deepest joys of life before you. Yet you risked everything here. Why? Why did you do it? What impelled you to put aside the instinct for self-preservation and risk your lives to take these cliffs? What inspired all the men of the armies that met here? We look at you, and somehow we know the answer. It was faith and belief. It was loyalty and love." Unquote. Amen. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Rosemary Jenks. She is the driving force behind an absolutely indispensable organization across the country now. It's called Numbers USA. 3 million people are part of it and are actively joined with Rosemary and her team in opposition to open borders, the amnesty programs that various people are pushing forward, and the kinds of security threats that will arise from them. And I couldn't be more pleased both to be partnered with her wherever possible, but also to have her with us today. Rosemary, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks, Frank. It's always a pleasure.
We have what I kind of think of as a children's crusade taking place at the moment. There seem to be thousands upon thousands of young people coming up from Mexico across our porous southern border. What's going on with this? What is the magnitude of it? What are the implications of it? Rosemary Jenks.
Well, this is an entirely predictable result of, first of all, President Obama systematically dismantling immigration enforcement and offering legal status, quasi-legal status, to a large group of young illegal aliens. So, of course, the message has gone out to the rest of the world that the United States is not enforcing its laws, particularly where it concerns women and children. So we have this massive surge of especially children, but also family units coming up from Central America mostly through Mexico, risking their lives. I mean, the cartel control who gets across the border from Mexico into the United States. They're raping these women and children. They are killing some of them. You know, they're kidnapping them and holding them for ransom. This is a horrible, horrible tragedy, and it's entirely predictable because of what's happening in Washington. And that also includes the fact that Boehner, Cantor, Republicans and Democrats alike in leadership positions in Congress are still talking about giving amnesty to everyone. That is drawing this huge surge. And by the way, in 2011, there were 6,000 unaccompanied children who came across the border illegally. They're expecting somewhere around 130,000 this year. They've more than doubled their estimate for this year. It is a crisis.
Yeah, it is a crisis for sure. And what is being done with these children? Are they being put on buses and sent home? Are they otherwise being rounded up? Or is there a further incentive for them to come by the accommodations that are being afforded them?
Oh, there's absolutely every incentive for more to come, because what's happening is, since they're from Central America and not from Mexico, we can't just turn them back around over the border. They have to actually be processed for removal. So essentially, they're being given court dates and then put on buses and shipped off to, if they have illegal family members in the United States, to them, or to warehousing situations, detention facilities, temporary facilities set up at military bases, and being housed there until our government, on taxpayer dime, can find someone willing to take care of them in the hopes that they will show up for a court date, which mostly they won't. And, you know, they're here. They're going to be able to stay.
This is, as you say, a predictable consequence of the policies that are being pursued. Is there evidence that this is actually being touted, promoted, encouraged as well inside some of these Central American nations from which these people seem mostly to be coming?
Well, you know, there's not necessarily evidence of some big coordinated effort. What always happens, and historically this has proven again and again, when the U.S. stops enforcing its laws and or starts talking about amnesty, there's a massive surge across the border because the word goes out. You know, the Hispanic media reports on immigration in the U.S. all the time, constantly. So everybody in those countries, and there's also a major communication network just through word of mouth from people who are here legally or illegally back home to their friends and relatives saying, you know, nobody's enforcing laws here. Come on in. That's right.
Rosemary, quickly, and again, our guest is Rosemary Jenks. She is the Director of Government Relations at Numbers USA. Talk about one piece of this. You mentioned the housing of some of these young people on military facilities. There's also a push to have some of them become, or at least people who have gotten to this country previously, who are young people, gain access to citizenship by being allowed to serve in our military. There is a move afoot on the part of the Obama administration to try to find a way to do this through executive action if it's not approved by Congress. Where does that stand, and how does that fit into this larger picture you've just described?
Well, this is, it's all part of the draw that is bringing people here, because the White House is working with the Pentagon, and apparently they've already decided that they're going to do this in the next few months. They're going to allow illegal aliens who have the deferred action program that the president put in place a couple of years ago to join the military, despite the fact that we are actually firing battle-proven soldiers, American soldiers, because of budget cuts. They're going to
by
make
the tens
room
of thousands, as
in
a matter
military.
Of fact.
Yeah.
They're going to be making room. And Rosemary, and I understand Dick Durbin, the number two Democrat in the Senate, has complained bitterly that they're not talking about including enough of these young people, illegal aliens, underscore illegal aliens, in the military.
Yeah. I mean, it is simply outrageous that he would say this when we are riffing our own soldiers. Just outrageous.
It is outrageous, but it again brings us back to what's the larger story here, and that is that the administration is evidently threatening Congress with doing through its own fiat what it can't get Congress to do, or at least hasn't thus far. Talk a little bit about the campaign that is now underway, both by the administration using this kind of sword of Damocles, if you will, and by allies it has on the Hill in both parties to try to jam something through the House between now and August.
Well, this is, you know, Obama has said that he's going to postpone his actions, his unconstitutional, illegal actions to change the law until August. If Congress doesn't act before the August recess, he will then act unconstitutionally and illegally. So supposedly this is supposed to be a threat to House Republicans to cause them to move forward with either the Senate's Gang of Eight bill or their own version of a massive amnesty. And in a sane world, Republicans would laugh and say, are you kidding me? You know, no, we're not going to do it. And no, you can't do it either. But they're not doing that. Paul Ryan, Mick Mulvaney, and Mario Diaz-Balart are working very hard as we speak to get support for what they're calling, quote, conservative immigration reform, which is still massive amnesty and still will be conferenced with the Senate Gang of Eight bill.
So we'll get the worst of both worlds.
To move it before the August recess. It's insanity. Absolute insanity.
Evidently, it's not going to begin until after at least a few more of the primaries are over. Talk very quickly, if you would, Rosemary Jenks, about Eric Cantor's primary and the degree to which this is figured into that race and the timing going forward for this initiative.
Yes, well, I can absolutely guarantee that there will be no move on immigration in the House of Representatives until after June 10th, which is Eric Cantor's primary. Despite the fact that he has been a leading voice on, you know, amnesty for kids and various other kinds of immigration bills moving forward, he is campaigning now in his primary as the sole person who is standing between the American people and the Obama-Reid amnesty, which is fine. You know, if he's going to stick with that position, fine. But we'll see. You know, he's going to be in control of what comes to the House floor as long as he's majority leader. So if the House moves any immigration bill, it will be because Eric Cantor made it so.
Yeah. And we know for a fact that he has been promoting the DREAM Act, which is, going back to what we talked about at the beginning, one of the magnets for these kids coming across the border illegally in huge numbers and creating this sense of further pressure, certainly further burden to the American people as a result. Rosemary Jenks, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate what you do at Numbers USA and the clarity that you bring to these issues. I trust that you will not only keep it up, but come back to us again soon with updates, as this is truly of monumental importance, folks, for the future of the country, that we get this right and not make a mistake of imposing an amnesty before changes that may make it likely a better approach to immigration. Rosemary, thank you. Keep up the terrific work, as I say. Next up, Bill Roggio joins us. He'll give us an update on the long war straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our weekly visit with Bill Roggio, the chronicler par excellence of The Long War. In fact, he is the managing editor of The Long War Journal, an indispensable online resource brought to us by the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, where Bill is a senior fellow. He is also a former U.S. military veteran and an embed in a number of different campaigns with different units, both American and foreign. And Bill is a terrific resource, in short, for our first topic, which is something
something we've been touching on for days now and with most of our guests, namely the implications for the long war of the president's decision to release five senior Taliban commanders in exchange for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. What do you make of this, Bill?
Yeah, this deal, first of all, it is a hostage exchange with the terrorist group. The Qani Network is a specially designated terrorist group that operates under the Taliban. And I think it's just indicative of the U.S. position in Afghanistan, which is leave at all costs. We're leaving Afghanistan without completing a mission. We're doing so quickly, and we're doing so at a high cost to U.S. and Afghan people. And the same thing is true with this. It's a microcosm, this Bergdahl deal. We exchange a guy who walked off a combat outpost for five of the arguably worst terrorists who were detained at Guantanamo. And these guys will be back in the fight shortly after they return to Afghanistan, supposedly within a year. But right now, they're in the fight now. Guarantee you they're having their version of the rubber chicken dinner circuit and raising a lot of money for the Taliban in Qatar.
Yeah, and I think you've written at the Long War Journal, Bill, that there's even reason to believe they're in the fight in other ways as well, in terms of perhaps, calling in the plays from the sidelines and that sort of thing. The Qataris not necessarily being reliable in terms of keeping them under control.
No, and as a matter of fact, there's a quote-unquote Gulf officials have said they're able to travel freely throughout Qatar, and they are not being closely monitored. So, they're not under arrest. They're just confined to the country for a year, and who knows if that'll even last.
And I'm deeply suspicious myself, to be honest with you. Bill, can I take advantage of your expertise in these matters? What is the relationship between the Taliban and the Haqqani network? And there was some speculation that the Haqqanis may have gotten something out of this deal as well, since the Taliban guys got released, a Haqqani detainee at Gitmo did not. Do you think that we might have, or the Qataris perhaps, might have also lubricated the deal with some money their way?
First of all, the Haqqani network is part of the Afghan Taliban. They've stated so. Top leaders of the Afghan Taliban and the top leader of the Haqqani network have both stated so, and we know this because they conduct joint operations. The Haqqani network releases propaganda through the Taliban website. It's just a Taliban subgroup that operates in certain regions in Afghanistan. From the very beginning, the groups have demanded, the Taliban and the Haqqani network have demanded those five prisoners that were freed. So I don't think the Haqqani network is looking at this as, we want our Haqqani guy. What they looked at this as, we're part of the Taliban and we want the five most important Taliban commanders, and that's what we're getting, and that's what they got.
Right. No question in your mind, Bill Roggio, that the guy we got back was in fact a deserter?
Yeah, I have no question. There has been numerous accounts. This was stated from the very beginning that the military said at the very least he walked off the base. I know there was some statement early on, or I can't remember if it was from the military or through Bergdahl's own statement that he was captured during a patrol, but everyone who was involved in that unit said absolutely not, he snuck off at night. And apparently there's evidence to this with him writing a letter and sending equipment home. And
right,
computers.
And that it wasn't the first time that he'd absconded. Bill, let me just ask you, because again, you have a command of these issues that is extraordinary. When our enemies see us behaving in a manner that they must construe as submissive, what does that likely mean in terms of their future conduct?
It just emboldens them to continue such activity. And keep in mind, there's an American in detention in Pakistan. He's captured. He's an older citizen. So, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, whatever you want to call them, this jihadist network, they view this as an absolute victory, as a sign of U.S. weakness. They've touted it as such, so it'll help recruiting and financing. And I think, look, it's difficult. It's obviously difficult to capture Americans in Afghanistan. But as we draw down, we become more exposed. I would expect them to redouble efforts to get more hostages, because it will benefit them. It'll help them clear Guantanamo out of the people that they want back to get back in the fight.
The larger point, I think, too, is that the Quran teaches these guys that you must make them feel subdued when you see this kind of behavior. I suspect that that will mean more violence for the rest of us as well. Bill Roggio, let me turn to a couple of other topics quickly with you, if I can. Again, Bill is the managing editor of the Long War Journal and a fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We've just seen further reverses at the hands of this terrorist group now operating in both Syria and Iraq being dealt to those who might have been, at least in the past, on our side in Anbar province in Iraq. Tell us the latest on that, and where do you think this is headed?
Yeah, so the Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham, it's a former al-Qaeda branch that was disowned due to a leadership dispute, but it's still a jihadist group that still says it wants to attack the U.S. and the West, and still is waging violent jihad to impose an Islamic caliphate. It just wants its brand on it. Actually two big successes in the last several days. First, it overran a city called Samarra. It took over half the city when about 150 to 200 fighters just stormed the city, and it came close to that Al-Askariya Mosque, which was when the dome was blown up in 2006, set off the sectarian fighting and what a lot of people call the Iraqi civil war between Sunni and Shia. And then second, a suicide bomber killed the head of the Awakening. Ahmed Abu Risha is the head of the Anbar Awakening. That's the tribal groups that fight al-Qaeda. His nephew was a top leader and a military commander within the group. He was killed in a suicide bombing in Ramadi in Anbar province. So the ISIS, despite its infighting in Syria with al-Qaeda and other groups, is raging strong in Iraq.
Yeah, and it is not good for what's left of our interests there, that's for sure. Bill, turning to another place where reverses are being meted out to us, it would seem, the Palestinian factions, Fatah and Hamas, both of them, I believe, sworn to the destruction of Israel, but Hamas very explicitly so, have now forged, as you know, a unity government. Despite U.S. laws that prohibit it, it appears the Obama administration is going to continue to try, at least, to provide support for, as well as negotiate with, this Hamas-composed government. What are the implications of that, as you see it, for the long war?
The implications, I mean, look, the Obama administration is just so eager to show some type of progress, supposed progress on the Israeli-Palestinian peace deal. And this is just the latest attempt. Again, this is an event or an incident where are we negotiating directly with terrorist groups if we're going to allow Hamas? Again, it just emboldens these groups. It makes them realize that we are not committed to our values while they remain committed to theirs. And that's really, you know, in a nutshell, that's why these groups are strong, because they stick to their guns on these issues, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, well said, as always. Bill Roggio, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. I'd hope to talk with you a little bit about Boko Haram rampaging unchecked in northern Nigeria, but that'll wait next week. In the meantime, we're deeply appreciative of the work you do at the Long War Journal and the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and you're basically illuminating of all of these issues for all the rest of us. Keep it up. Come back to us again next week, and I trust the rest of you will do the same. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom.